Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Tuesday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode several years ago. More than two, less than ten. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on December 29th of 2014, under the headline, Roseburg's Champagne Riot. Probably not what you think. Here we go. It was Christmas Day in 1866. Officially, the Civil War had been over for a year and a half. Unofficially, though, not everybody agreed that its outcome settled things, especially in Douglas County, Oregon. At the time, Douglas County was like a microcosm of the United States. There was a Republican majority in the more populous and powerful northern part of the county, which had voted itself into full control of county government, much to the fury of the resentful, disenfranchised, Dixie-friendly majority in the south of the county. And like Washington, D.C., between the warring North and South, the county seat at Roseburg was located almost directly between the two regions. Approval or disapproval at the outcome of the war and of the subsequent Reconstruction program in the South split the Roseburg community right down the middle, with Southern Democrats bitterly resentful and Republicans and pro-Union Democrats gloatingly triumphant. Douglas County wouldn't really be at peace until the following year, with the outcome of an event that's been described only partly in jest as the last battle of the Civil War. It's known today as the Champagne Riot, although it was more a drunken brawl than a riot, and there certainly, or almost certainly, was no champagne involved. The Champagne Riot started out as a Christmas party, or rather, two Christmas parties. Feelings were so sore in the Roseburg area that the two sides each threw their own. The pro-Southern citizens threw their Christmas ball at Good's Mill near Roseburg. The Unionists had theirs at the home of Joseph Champagne in the tiny, now long-gone hamlet of French Settlement, 6 miles west of Roseburg. Everything was fine and jolly and festive until about 3 a.m. when the pro-Southern party wound its way to a close, and the dancers and revelers started heading home to bed. But a small group of them, young, hot-blooded men from old Southern families, decided the night was still young enough for some more action. They further decided that the place to go for that action was Joseph Champagne's place, where the damn Yankee sympathizers were celebrating their recent victories. Armed to the teeth and well fortified with holiday spirits, these young troublemakers set out on horseback for French Settlement, 4 miles away. The primary purpose of the visit was for one of the five, Solomon Culver, to settle a score with one of the Unionists, George Bennett. Culver's cousin, John Fitzhugh, came along, and three of Culver's friends, Abe Crow, Bob Forbes, and John Hannon, rounded out the little war party. Fitzhugh was a particularly interesting character. Reportedly a distant relative of Robert E. Lee, he was a prominent Democratic leader in Roseburg and the founder and former publisher of Roseburg's first newspaper, the Roseburg Express, which he launched in 1860, just before the Civil War broke out. It didn't last long. After the shooting started, federal authorities went looking for Copperhead newspapers and shutting them down, and the Express, along with the Albany Democrat, Corvallis Union, Table Rock Sentinel, Eugene Herald, and Portland Daily News, was suppressed. What the erstwhile journalist did after that for the duration of the war isn't clear, but there's one thing we know he didn't do, and that's give up on his pro-Southern beliefs. Fitzhugh and his four comrades arrived at the rival gang's party around 4 a.m. Upon their arrival, they got busy right away. Culver found Bennett, whipped out his dragoon revolver, and pistol-whipped him across the face with it, breaking his nose. Then the party's host, Frank Berenger, hurried to the scene, apparently to try to defuse the situation, and, presumably after a heated exchange of words, though the newspapers don't say, Fitzhugh pulled a Derringer and shot him through the heart. Berenger slipped to the floor and died without speaking another word. Then fists and knives and pistols started flashing and flying, and the fighting became general. The fiddle player, Ash Clayton, set down his instrument, grabbed a knife, and used it to let some air out of Solomon Culver's left lung. Abe Crow took offense to this, and pulling his revolver, shot Clayton twice with it, once in the leg and once across the scalp, and then slashed him across the head with his knife. Fitzhugh, now armed only with the empty derringer, rushed another partygoer named Tom Thompson, which turned out to be a huge mistake because Thompson clearly knew his way around a six-shooter better than anyone else in the room. Two gunshots later, Fitzhugh was done for the night. Not dead, but badly wounded. Forbes and Hannon, seeing this, attacked Thompson and were also shot down, both hit in the stomach. Crow, suddenly realizing he was the only survivor of the little war party, gave full rein to the better part of valor and fled into the night. Over the next week or two, much to the surprise of nearly everyone, nearly all the injured parties rallied and recovered. Only Bob Forbes, whose spine had been broken by Thompson's revolver ball, and Beringer, shot through the heart by Fitzhugh, died. Fitzhugh was soon arrested and put on trial for murder along with Hannon. Crow, who had made a dreadful mess of fiddle player Clayton, couldn't be found. It's not clear why Culver wasn't charged, but chances are good that his sucking stab wound was still too serious for him to make a court appearance. The riot, which got extensive newspaper coverage all over Oregon, had brought the lingering resentments in Douglas County to a head, and hundreds of people took an avid interest in this trial. For most of them, it was more than just a drunken act of petty criminality. It was a proxy fight between the forces of the North and the South. When it was all over, the jury found both men guilty, but the judge sentenced them to very light sentences. 5 years for Fitzhugh and one for Hannon. The champions of Unionists and Southern Democrats alike decried the verdict in editorial pages and coffeehouses, the one side complaining about the light sentences, the other about the guilty verdict. But after it was all over and nobody's team had won, Douglas County residents were finally able to settle down and live with one another. If not at peace, then, well, at least not actively at war. Key sources of this story include works by Jeff LaLand and the Portland Morning Oregonian. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. More information is at our hub page, offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. Speaking of which, if you enjoy listening to me, you might check out my other podcast, the weekly Friedrich Wilhelm von Jungst Library of Forgotten Worlds podcast. It's basically readings of classic pulp stories. You can find it with a search for von Jungst, V-O-N space J-U-N-Z-T, on iTunes or on your podcatcher. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Want to visit about Oregon history or anything else? Email me for any reason or for no reason at all at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday morning, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.